If there is tens of thousands of hectares on the market, then you might as well use them for conservation.
Welcome to another episode of Rewilding the World with Ben Goldsmith. I'm a rewilding enthusiast from Britain, and I'm looking for the most exciting, uplifting, positively transformational rewilding stories from around the world. And I'm very excited to have with us today Christoph Promberger, an old friend of mine, who is rewilding with his wife and a large team an enormous tract of wildwood in Transylvania and Carpathia, Romania. Christoph, thank you so much for joining us. I'd be very grateful if you'd tell me a little about the landscape in which you live and work. How was this place in history and what happened to it?
I'm sitting here in my office right at the foot of the Carpathian Mountains, sort of on the northeast side of the Făgăraș Mountains. Făgăraș Mountains are the south central part of the Carpathians in Romania. And this is an area which is quite rugged. It had never been glaciated. So the valleys are very, very steep. They're not these U-shaped valleys, but they're rather the V-shaped valleys. Part of these valleys are quite inaccessible, very difficult to enter. And the very, very cool thing about these mountains is that we still have pretty much everything that should be here and that once was here. So we have carnivores, we got the wolves, the bears, and the lynx. We got all the large ungulates up in the high alpine, the chamois, and then lower the red deer, the roe deer, the wild boar. But also we have all the smaller stuff, all the marten species, and even all the way down to the insects. You know, we got beetles that you find only in virgin, pristine forests. And this is something that's very, very special for Europe. And this is why we love that place so much.
And what's the scale of this wild landscape?
You know, when we look at the Făgăraș Mountains only, which is sort of the south central piece of the Southern Carpathians, then we are talking about an area of over 500,000 acres where there's not a single settlement. So that is an area, you know, that is just huge for European conditions where humans have never settled. They have used the area in one way or the other. There has been some logging and they have used the alpine areas for sheep grazing, but there has never been any settlements. And this is something I don't know any other place, at least in Central Europe, you know, that has so huge and still without any settlements.
And what about threats to this place? Have there been anthropogenic impacts? What has gone wrong there in the last few decades?
The area has been suffering from human presence, nevertheless. It started sort of a good 100 years ago when logging in those valleys started. So wherever valleys were not that inaccessible, they built roads into it and they started to log the pristine forests. But nevertheless, I mean, a lot of it has remained because, you know, where the valleys are steeper and so on, they couldn't access it. And then after the Second World War, sort of in the 50s and 60s, a more regular forestry started, which was good on the one side because it protected these remote areas. But on the other side, it also did quite a bit of harm because the beech forests and the mixed forests were often replaced by spruce monocultures. So this, of course, alters the whole ecosystem, makes them more vulnerable to all kind of bark beetle attacks, to climatic conditions and so on. But obviously, I mean, from an economic point of view, in the short term, at least, it was more interesting. So that was what happened sort of in the 60s, 70s, 80s, the replacement of the natural forest types through spruce monocultures in some areas. And then the real problem started sort of with 2005, when the government restituted those forests that had been nationalized during communism and gave them back to the former owners, respectively the heirs of the former owners. And this was often done in a way that they didn't even get the forests back where their ancestors used to have them, but they got the forests back somewhere. And that meant that these people usually had very little relationship to these forests. It was not that, you know, there was a mountainside that my great-grandfather looked after and my grandfather looked after and my father looked after. So I have the the duty to look after them as well. It was more like, you know, you get somewhere a piece of forest, you have no idea where it is, you can do with it whatever you want, more or less. And so there was a big temptation for these new landowners when logging companies came in and people, you know, that had different views on using these forests and put them some money on the table and said, give me your forests and I take care of them. And this is what happened. And, you know, huge areas were clear cut in the year sort of between 2005 and 2012. And I mean, we have some of the valleys where we have, 5,000 acres or so totally clear felled without any replanting. And that, of course, has, caused a major threat to these mountain ecosystems.
Christoph, you and Barbara have devoted your lives to nature and rewilding. How did you find this place? How did you come to live there? And what's your vision?
I studied forestry, not because I was into logging trees. It was more because my great-grandfather was a forester, my grandfather was a forester, my father was a forester, so I just found it interesting, especially since it was, you know, we covered all the natural sciences. But during university already, I never had the feeling that I would want to go into forestry. So I focused on wildlife biology. I did my master's thesis on wolves in the Canadian Yukon Territory. When I came back and finished university, I just wanted to continue with a PhD somewhere on wolves in Europe. And this is how I ended up in Romania, because Romania was simply the country that had the most wolves. It was a country that I had no idea even where it is. But I just, early 90s, 92, I headed off and went to see this Romania, where I heard of that there are so many wolves. And I fell in love with the country. And I thought I'm going to stay 3 years. Then it said 5 years. Then it was 10 years. And now it's almost 30 years. And I've never left again. And Barbara came as a master's student to this project to also work on wolves. She studied zoology in Vienna. And, well, how things go, you know, we met, we fell in love, and we stayed together here. And it was never for us anymore the feeling that we want to leave this country. It's just so beautiful.
And what's the plan, both within the landscape where you live and work, and also for connecting that landscape out into other landscapes across the region?
You know, we did this large carnivore project from 93 until 2003. And then sort of we wanted to have a bit of a break from working in projects and wanted to do something different. So we set up our own horse riding facility. So we went into ecotourism, did that for a couple of years. But then we felt like, you know, conservation is really where we want to go back. And that was just when all these clear cuts started. We saw that happening and we were like totally shocked. And we felt like we have to do something about it. And, you know, as things went, we met a very wealthy Swiss gentleman who came and visited us. And we explained him what we felt like, you know, is necessary there to save these forests. And he said, well, let's go, let's do that. And he said, actually, you know, this area, these Fagerash Mountains, there is something like the Yellowstone of Europe. He has never seen anything like this in Europe. So he said, let's go, let's do that. Let's start to buy forests for to protect them. Because, you know, since many of these new landowners wanted to sell the forests, it was a threat on the one side, but it was also an opportunity for conservation. Because if there is tens of thousands of hectares on the market, then you can, you might as well use them for conservation. So we started to buy these forests, and sort of by now we have about, what is it, about 65,000 acres that we have purchased. Directly, we have created this Foundation Conservation Carpathia, which is a big organization. It's now, the largest conservation organization in Eastern Europe. And the idea is to transform these Fagerash Mountains into the largest forest national park that exists on the continent. Something that is a real iconic national park, you know, like Yellowstone is for North America or Serengeti is for Africa. We don't have anything like this in Europe, and we think that the Fagerash Mountains are just the right place to do that. But obviously, it's not just going to be conservation. It's also about all the villages around these mountains, because outside the forests, there are villages. There are 28 communes, and a national park has only a chance if we take these people along and if we can demonstrate that a national park is actually the better solution for them than just going on with this unsustainable logging.
And which parts of the local community are seemingly opposed to the work of the foundation? And how have you sought to bring them on board and work with them and make them happy with this project?
When we started and sort of we became a bit more influential and managed to kick parts of this timber mafia out that had developed after this restitution process, we didn't make only friends, obviously. So this timber mafia got really, really upset about us, and then they started to really attack us. And since this timber mafia is very widespread, there's, some of the local foresters are part of that, because a tree, if the local foresters are not agreeing to a tree being cut, it's not going to be cut. So not all of them, but some of them were involved. Logging companies were involved. Police was involved. Even, the forest control authority was involved. Politicians are involved. And so that was a very, very powerful, I don't want to say organization, because it's not really organized, but a very powerful group of people. And we upset them. And so they started to tell all kind of stories about us, that this national park that we want, would mean that the local communities will have to leave. We would build a big fence around it. They wouldn't be allowed to enter their own forests anymore. They couldn't collect mushrooms anymore. They wouldn't be allowed to put their sheep up in the mountains. And all that stuff. And that was very, very difficult for us to fight against that. But I guess now, we are really active in 9 of these communes where we have land ownership, where we are present, where we do all kind of project activities. And this is where the local communities have seen that actually, we're not that bad. Actually, we provide a lot of jobs, income opportunities, and we do everything, from education programs, we work with local schools, all the way to building a new green economy, working with local organizations and clubs, for example.
So you've mentioned Yellowstone a couple of times, and of course, the iconic species of Yellowstone and the wider American West is the American bison. Not many people know that we have our own European bison that was almost driven to extinction in recent decades. I believe that the last few survived in zoos only in the early part of the 20th century. And you've been spearheading the effort to return European bison back to Romania. Tell us a little about that and the role that the bison are playing in the Fagaras Mountains.
That's true that sort of in the 1920s, I think there were only 12 bison left. And every bison that we have now are the descendants of these 12 bison. So this is also has gone through a really dramatic genetic bottleneck. The situation for the bison has been very, very difficult for many decades. Now, recently, it's improving. There's more and more reintroduction projects in Romania. In the late 90s, there was the first reintroduction project started in the northeast of the country. Then sort of now, I think like 10 years ago, the second one started in the west of the country. But these are two areas that were very, very far apart, I think more than 500 kilometers apart. So we had the idea to start a third bison reintroduction project in the Fagaras Mountains, because that would connect all these areas. And that would be the area, where you can really start talking about a Carpathian bison population again. The bison are very, very important species for the forests because, they're heavy, they're big grazers. So they cause always sort of small disruptions in this forest. And there's nothing worse in a forest than unity. If everything is the same, if there's no differences, that doesn't bring any diversity. And the bison can help to create this diversity. They create little holes in the forest. They walk up and down the river streams with their big hooves. They break up the soil. So it's small effects that they have, but due to their permanent effects, actually the effect upon these forest ecosystems is very, very positive. So we brought the first bison in 2019 into that area, into some enclosures where we kept them for the first couple of months throughout the winter so that they would form a herd, because, you know, some of them were coming from Poland, some were coming from Germany, some from Sweden, some from the UK, Netherlands, you just name it, from all kind of different zoos and wildlife parks, we got them. And when the bison then had formed this herd and the winter was over with the first green, we let them go. And so from April 2020 onwards, we have the first free-ranging bison herd. By now, in 2.5 years later, we have 5 bison herds already. We've got 39 animals out in the wild. They are already reproducing. We had this summer 6 calves born. That also means that they're feeling well, you know, they've adapted to their environment, and they're actually getting like real wild animals. You know, they're shy, you cannot easily approach them. If they see you, they keep a distance, they run away. And we are just having in 3 of such enclosures, we're having another 20 bison that we're going to release in spring next year. So again, you know, the bison population here will grow considerably. And the day before yesterday, we got a call from a hunter who is about 40 kilometers away from us. And he said that he had on a camera trap that he had set up, there was a bison running through. That means that individual animals already leaving the area and migrating and forming sort of a real wider population. And I think it's just a matter of maybe another 10 years, and we will have them really, you know, sort of all over this southern Carpathians, and then also connecting slowly to the northeast. So I think that's a real, real fantastic issue.
To what extent in the future will the bison be able to connect out into surrounding landscapes, possibly transnational landscapes in neighboring countries, for example?
The bison, as long as you leave them alone and as long as there is space for them, they will expand. From what we have seen so far, they're not going out of the forest. So our bison are pretty much forest-dwelling animals. They have often got to the edge of the forest, but they don't really dare to go out in the open landscape. So I'm not sure whether they will eventually get also, for example, into the Transylvanian hills. They would have to cross a 20-kilometer wide valley where there is no forest, no nothing, highways, railway lines, and so on. So I don't know whether this is going to happen, but they will definitely, you know, move along the mountain range. And then if they move north, they will get into Ukraine, Slovakia, and Poland. So they will connect with some existing bison there. If they go to the southeast, to the southwest, sorry, they will get into, you know, close to the Danube. And then if they manage to cross the Danube, they can get into Serbia and then into Bulgaria and actually repopulate maybe the Balkan mountains, the Stara Planina, which is, again, you know, would be a great thing. So I think if we allow them to move, they will repopulate the big areas again. So that's positive. And the interesting thing is also that the Romanians really love the bison. There is a you know, strong history about bison. The bison has even been the national emblem of the north of Romania. And we did a public survey about the bison before we started to see, you know, how people think about it. And we saw that the feeling towards the bison is very, very positive. And one of the villages where we have reintroduced the bison, it's called Lerești, they came to us, the mayor came to us at some point in time and said, you know, these bison are really fantastic because we already see visitors coming in wintertime, you know, wanting to see the bison when they're down in the valleys, when they're easier to be seen. And then he said in that conversation, he said, you know, there's another thing that our football club, our local football club, just went from the 5th league into the 4th Romanian league. And this is a bit of a problem for us because we cannot fund that anymore. We don't have the necessary funds. And he asked me whether we could, you know, possibly help them financially. So we discussed that, and eventually we developed the idea that we could use that football club as sort of the ambassador for the bison. So he said, you know, let's recall our football club. At the moment, it was called Mușcel Lerești. And he said, let's change the name, let's call it Bison Lerecht. And then we made the, you know, new logo for the club. So the logo has now the bison head as a symbol. We made them tricos, you know, so Carpathia is now the trico sponsor. I assume that we are the only conservation NGO that is trico sponsor of a football club. And we haven't managed to get to Chelsea yet. We are still with Lerecht. But anyway, you know, the local people love it and they are now totally into the bison. And, you know, the football club is the bison. And when they're successful, you know, the bison are successful. And that's a way how we can really get people to love these animals.
Another formerly absent keystone species which you've brought back to that part of Romania is the beaver. You know, we know that the beaver plays a keystone role in restoring the natural hydrology of the landscape and breathing life back into the smaller creeks and streams of a river system. And they were long gone when you arrived. How did you bring beavers back?
The beavers were... they disappeared in the early 1900s, you know, despite the fact that Romania is probably, you know, all the rivers and the creeks and the Danube and the Danube Delta is just perfect beaver habitat. They just disappeared because they were all killed off. And then in the late 90s, we worked with an organization from Germany with a gentleman called Gerhard Schwab, who was, you know, by then sort of the neighbor of my office, because he had his office next to mine when I was still having an office in Germany as well. And he came down and he looked at the area and he said, I don't even need to make a feasibility study because this is just, you know, better habitat than we have anywhere in Germany, in Bavaria. And so he worked together with the Romanian Research Institute of the Forest Administration, and they started to bring back beavers in the late 1990s into the Olt River and down into the Danube. And these beavers have really spread well. We have made a year and a half ago a survey on, you know, the beavers in this original area where they have reintroduced them. There is now probably over 350 individuals already. They have spread all over the place. But the thing is that they have not managed, obviously, to get over the mountains. The mountains are, you know, 2,000, 2,500 meters high. And so they did not manage to get into the south side. They are down in the Danube, but they cannot really come up from the Danube into the south side, into these rivers of the southern Făgăraș Mountains, simply because there is that's all agricultural steppe. There's no willows, no poplars, no nothing. Many of these rivers are channeled with concrete for, you know, tens of kilometers, and so the beavers can't really get through this barrier. And so what we have been doing is we have then caught beavers on the north side and translocated them to the south side. We have now this year, we have brought the first 24 beavers down to the southern area. And we see that they're doing well. They've already, you know, established at some places. They have built their dams. They have built their lodges. And I guess next year we're probably going to see the first reproduction in the south side. And, you know, that's the first reproduction of beavers after more than 100 years now. So that's pretty amazing. And where they built their dams and their lodges and so on, we can already tell, you know, how the environment is changing. You know, you suddenly have these little ponds where insects are, you know, these water insects are much more present. You can tell that the water gets much cleaner. The fish population will be definitely increasing due to that. So again, you know, the beavers will just, by creating a bit of disturbance into the water system, will do so much positive things.
Christoph, are you still buying land? And how big can this project get?
We're still buying land, but not on the magnitude anymore as we used to do, simply because there's not that much left anymore. We have at the moment over 60,000 acres of land that we have purchased, and maybe we can buy another let's say maybe 10 or 15,000 acres maximum. That's what we can still purchase. After that, there's just simply nothing left to buy because the majority of these Fagarash mountains are either communal forests and landowners associations make up for about 50% of the surface, and the state has about a third of the whole area. So the maximum we can buy is like 17%, if everybody would be selling, and that's not happening. There's a few landowners, and that's very, very okay with us. They just want to keep the forests. So obviously we have to think about what we do because we cannot make a national park with this mosaic of different properties. When we have, by now, I think we have like 1,400 different properties and they're not all linked together. It's not one solid block. So what we are now trying to do is that we convince the landowners that are not going to sell that they would put their forests under a protection scheme based on conservation payments. For example, like the carbon credits scheme. And like this, you know, they can still maintain their ownership. They can make money with it, probably even more money than logging it. And at the same time, they would be happy with having such a national park.
So the eventual size of the whole landscape will be in the hundreds of thousands of acres. If you can weave nature-friendly management through this whole landscape of privately owned, state-owned, and foundation-owned land.
That's correct. Only the Fagarash Mountains are 500,000 acres. And then there is left and right, there is a lot more areas, you know, maybe not in that magnitude, but with, you know, everything between 50,000 and 100,000 acres. So the whole southern Carpathians and then after the bend towards the north could simply become a chain of national parks, of protected areas. And that could become, you know, like really the green lung of Europe. And at the same time for Romania, if Romania would go a similar path than, let's say, Costa Rica did, you know, having really a strong network of protected areas, national parks on a large surface, Romania could market itself as the top ecotourism destination in Europe. Because Romania has not only the beautiful mountain areas, Romania has also the Transylvanian hills, which is, you know, an ancient grassland with beautiful, very, very picturesque landscapes. It has a Danube Delta, which is the second largest wetland in all of Europe with hundreds of different bird species. So Romania has an incredible value. Unfortunately, it has not been recognized by the Romanian politicians yet that this is actually the way forward to go. But I think the future will clearly be on our side because with the biodiversity strategy of the European Union, with change in travel habits due to, you know, climate change, due to pandemics and all that, people will travel more on a shorter distance. And so we have 500 million people around us here in Europe. So, you know, even if only 20% of them would be coming to Romania, that would be 100 million, way more than I think we should ever have, because that would be way too much. But the potential is here. And, you know, what Italy or Spain were in, you know, in the 80s, 90s and 2000s in respect to tourism is something that Romania could become in the future, the top tourism destination.
And how do people visit your project? What's the best way?
We have different possibilities. So we work with some of the travel agencies that organize groups to come here. But we're also very happy to have people visiting us directly. We have a website, travelcarpathia.com, where people can look at. So you can book trips to wilderness cabins where you can watch wild bears or other wildlife from these heights. We have thematic trips. We can do tailor-made trips. We have a biodiversity farm in the hills of Transylvania, where we also have guest houses where people can visit. We have in at this biodiversity farm, we've got this ancient gray cattle, you know, with these very, very long horns, absolutely amazing creatures. And we all link always local communities, the conservation with visitors. And so it's much more than just, you know, going to Dracula Country and visiting Bran Castle, which we never include into our trips. We do the real stuff.
Christoph, it's hard to overstate the magic of what you and Barbara and your team are doing there. I'm just so grateful for what you do, and I'm so grateful for you having taken the time to chat to me now. And I can't wait to see you in May when I come there myself. Thank you very, very much, Christoph.
Thank you very much, and we're looking very forward to seeing you here, and hopefully a lot more people to come.
Talking to Christoph has filled me with excitement and joy for what's possible. When we think of huge, connected, wild landscapes filled with wildlife, we think of far-off places. But actually, right here on our doorstep in Europe, such landscapes are being brought back to life through the work of people like Christoph and Barbara. If you want to follow their extraordinary work and the progress of this huge rewilding project, go to carpathia.org, sign up for the newsletters, and think about visiting. I've been longing to visit for a number of years, and I'm finally going soon with some friends for some hiking, wildlife watching, and hopefully to meet Christoph and Barbara themselves. If you're enjoying Rewilding the World, I'd be so grateful if you'd leave us a positive review and a 5-star rating. It matters a lot in spreading the word and getting the podcast out there. Next time, I'm going to be talking to a remarkable young lady named Pau Fernandez Garrido in Spain. Pau leads an organization named Dam Removal Europe. So many of Europe's rivers, big and small, have been straitjacketed with concrete structures such as weirs and dams that have all kinds of terrible consequences, from blocking the movement of wildlife and migratory fish upstream and downstream, to preventing the flow of sediment downstream, causing the disappearance of our great river estuary deltas and sandy beaches. Dam Removal Europe, led by Pau, is at the heart of a growing river rewilding movement in Europe. Do join us next time to hear more from Pau.